Welcome to Nightlife, the first hour.
Many of you may remember, many of you probably do remember, a teacher who changed your life. The English teacher who introduced you to the fascination of a good book. The maths teacher who showed you the magic of algebra. Or the sports teacher who gave you confidence or offered you a shoulder to cry on. There's no doubt that teachers are undervalued in society. And with the pressure of assessments, nap plan, high-need students, demanding parents, school excursions, school musicals, the demands of a system that requires data on everything, burnout is a very serious and real prospect. Up to 30% of Australian teachers quit in the first 5 years. It's an astonishing figure, given the efforts that have been gone to train teachers in the first place. Those figures represent a fantastic waste of resources and a waste of people's time, don't they? For many, their jobs have become a never-ending treadmill to keep ahead of the students. Well, tonight on Nightlife, we're talking teacher burnout, what it is, how to prevent it, and how to improve a system that some argue just simply asks too much of its employees. Joining me tonight, Gabby Stroud, a former teacher and now writer. Gabby, good evening to you. Welcome to Nightlife. Hello, Gabby.
Good evening, Phil. Thanks for having me this evening.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you on the program too. And Kevin Bates, president of the Queensland Teachers Union too, joins us on Nightlife as well. Kevin, good evening and welcome to Nightlife.
Good evening, Phil. It's good to be with you.
Yes, well, you too. Gabby, you were teaching at a local school in Bega in New South Wales. You knew you were a good teacher, but in 2014, eventually you reached a point where you had to quit. Why?
Well, I'd reached a point, Phil, where I just thought, you know what, I'm never going to get this work done while all the kids keep coming into school. Mm. And I know that sounds crazy, but the workload, the administrative workload, was just so overwhelming. And so what happened to me was one Thursday afternoon, I was in my classroom. I was trying to get the last of the assessments done with these beautiful little kindergarten children. And I just could see time slipping away from me, and I suddenly thought, I'm not going to get this done. And then after that came this further realisation, a much deeper and more profound realisation, which was, I'm not teaching anymore. I was doing something. I was turning up every day, and there were kids, and it was a school. But what I was doing wasn't teaching. And when I had that realisation, an awful feeling came over me. My heart was thundering in my chest. I, you know, had the sweaty palms and I couldn't think straight. And I sort of thought, oh, this is it. I'm going to have a heart attack right here at my desk. But what that was just physical burnout. And it was just my body telling me what it had been trying to tell me for a long time, which was, you're trying to do the impossible task and you just can't do it any longer.
You say you realised you weren't teaching anymore. You were doing something else. What were you doing, do you think? Or what did it feel like?
Well, I think I was doing a lot of administrative tasks. So, you know, teaching by its very nature, there is a lot of paperwork that needs to be done. There's preparation that needs to be done. There's a program that needs to be written, and that's understandable. That's part of the teaching cycle. But these days in teaching, there's so much more. So, you know, all your assessing that has to be done, it's so formal these days, and it has to be reported to people higher up. But all the data has to be collected so it can get passed along in the chain. Now we have professional teaching standards, so you have to be documenting everything that you're doing and proving your worth all the time, constantly looking for evidence of that you're meeting these standards. And then there's just all those other things like keeping the role, keeping on top of notes and permission slips and informing parents of what's going on in the classroom, adapting your curriculum for students with additional needs, attending all the meetings, you know, getting on board with all the whole school projects that's going on. You know, my school was involved in a collaboration on student achievement and all these sorts of things. And we were video recording our lessons and watching each other teach and then reporting on that and reflecting on that. And then you've got your fundraisers and your concerts and your fetes and your professional development in services and your anaphylaxis training and your first aid training and your policy writing. And I could just go on and on and on with with all the additional things that a teacher has to do that really take them away from this thing that they're actually called to do, which is to teach the students that they're with.
Mm. You've got a real issue with the sorts of collection of data that goes on. I mean, all kinds of data. You even have to fill out a form if you use a Band-Aid on a kid, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. So if a child comes to me and they come to me with a knee and it's bleeding, and that, you know, there's always a really great story that goes with that, you know, as to how they got the bleeding knee. But, you know, then I have to go and find the school-approved first aid kit, and I have to glove up, and it's very difficult to even open a Band-Aid when you've got rubber gloves on, but, you know, we struggle through. And then you pop the Band-Aid on and, you know, you send the child on their way, and then you, you know, dispose of your gloves and everything, and then you go and you find the form and you fill out the form. Now, anyone who knows a child who's 5 or 6 years old in kindergarten, you might deal with 3 or 4 bleeding knees in one lunchtime. That's a lot of time filling out forms for Band-Aids, you know, and it's really nothing. That's really not my job description. That's not what I'm there to do.
I mean, a lot of people listening might say, well, hang on, everyone's job's changed in over the years, and, you know, people, the old job descriptions have changed. People, I mean, as technology's adapted, as we've, you know, got a need for more reporting, the jobs have changed. What you're saying is you think teaching's changed way faster than other professions.
Absolutely. I think there's a few things that go on with that. I think that the change that I saw in the last, I would say the last 7 to 9 years of my teaching career, the change was exponential. I rarely missed a day of teaching, and I went to all the staff meetings and took notes. I was, you know, a really conscientious teacher. And I found myself sitting there listening in staff meetings, and these acronyms were being, you know, bandied about, and I'd be flipping back through my notes and saying, well, hang on, what's this now? Like, what's this about? There's just so much being thrown at teachers under all these elaborate names, and I couldn't even keep up. And that was, you know, I was trying really hard to do that. I think also the other thing that goes along with that is that, yes, you know, all professions have changed, and that's fine, and technology's come in and things like that. The thing that's happened with teaching, though, is that nothing's been taken away. So, you know, we still have to do the same job that I was asked to do, you know, 20 years ago when I first started teaching, but now all this as well. And teachers and schools have somehow found themselves in a position where they're now in charge of, you know, we're charged with this massive responsibility of teaching kids, you know, all the social graces and how to swim and how to be safe around a dog and how to brush your teeth properly, all these things that teachers are expected to do now, you know, eat a piece of fruit every day and make sure you're sipping on your water. Some of these things, surely they can't just be a teacher's responsibility. Mm. We need to have a look at all the things we're lumping onto the shoulders of a teacher and see what can we take away, what needs to be, you know, removed so that this workload becomes more manageable.
All right, well, we're talking with Gabby Stroud, who's a former teacher who did love teaching but fell out of love with it for reasons which she was just describing. Kevin Bates is the president of the Queensland Teachers Union. Kevin, good evening to you too. Does what Gabby saying ring a bell for you?
It certainly does, Phil, and not only does it ring a bell in terms of the hundreds of thousands of teachers across Australia who have lived the experiences that Gabby's described, but in my position I have the privilege of joining with our colleagues right around the world, and I have to say that this is a conversation that's happening in education systems right across the globe, because people are very concerned about the way in which workload has grown for teachers in ways that are beyond the control of the profession and having a very significant and detrimental impact on the conduct of professional teachers in schools.
Yeah. What do you say about the about people? In fact, I've already got a text about this from a listener who says, what are you going on about? You get all those paid holidays every year. None of the rest of us get that. So why are you whinging?
No, that's right, Phil. And it's the usual comeback whenever this conversation comes up is, you know, it's about paid holidays and so on. And I think we need to very quickly park the myths about the fact that teachers are on paid leave.
You park them for me. Go on.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think what we have to do is acknowledge that, in fact, what most teachers are doing, and in fact, there will be people at home tonight listening to your program who will be doing this as well, is they're planning, they're marking student work, they're writing report cards. They're doing all the sorts of things that Gabby's described that they can't do during the school day because they're standing in front of a class of students. What people need to realise, of course, is that teaching is unique as a profession in many ways. It probably ranks closest to doctors and nursing, where you know, you can't just go and take a break. You can't, even in many cases, something as simple as a bathroom stop is something that has to be carefully planned and fitted into a particular schedule, because there's a group of 28 or 30 students that you have responsibility for, that you can't simply go off out of the room to grab a cup of coffee or go to the bathroom. So these are things that people often ignore when they're making comments about, you know, 9 to 3 and 10 weeks paid holiday a year. They don't appreciate that there are, in fact, things that teachers are doing during that time that are still very firmly...
Although that's true, isn't it? You say you're parking the myths, but I mean, those bald figures are true too, though, aren't they? There they are, generally the work hours, and you do get those holidays.
Yeah, but they're not holidays. And that's what I think is really important for people to understand, is that it might be time in which students are not at school, but those are the many hours, part of the many hours a week and a year that teachers spend to get through the vast body of work that they're expected to do.
So would teachers on those holidays be, but they wouldn't be at work, would they? Would they be at school?
It varies enormously. And, you know, I was a teacher. I've been a teacher for 30 years. You know, for a significant part of that time, I'd have to say my experience is that during school holidays, there are many teachers who go to school because that's often where the resources are that they need to access to do their planning and preparation and student marking. Not entirely, not exclusively, you know, there would be not a day goes by that you're not driving past a school in the early hours of the morning or late into the evening and there are still cars parked there for teachers who are working in their school. Same happens on school holidays. So it's not a simple matter of you know, turning up at 9 o'clock and you can just present in front of a class of 30 students and everything just happens as if by magic. There's an enormous amount of work that goes into being prepared as a teacher to present to those students, to deal with the eventualities that pop up during the course of a lesson, and ensuring that you can keep all of the masters who have control of the education system happy around what it is that you're doing in the classroom and the outcomes that you're achieving for those students.
Kevin Bates is my guest, together with Gabby Stroud. Gabby, a former teacher, and Kevin, the president of the Queensland Teachers Union. We're talking about teacher burnout. One of the interesting things that came up from looking at some figures from the Australian Council for Educational Research is that a huge number of teachers appeared to be forced into teaching subjects that they're actually not really qualified to teach. Some, for example, teaching science at a basic level when they've never studied science at university at all. Is that a significant problem?
It's certainly an issue, and it's an issue because to a very large extent it means that as a teacher, and you know, I'm speaking here from personal experience, having taught well outside of my subject areas in a number of occasions because of the nature of the schools that I worked in, small secondary schools with a small number of teachers where you had to share the curriculum across the teachers who were available in country Queensland. Now, that's the sort of scenario where you very quickly adapt and adopt practices that are protective of yourself and your professional well-being, but it does mean that you're often behind the eight ball in terms of trying to prepare your lessons and be a couple of days in front of where the students are in presenting material that you might not be familiar with. Now, that issue has certainly grown over time, and there are a whole range of subject areas, specialist subject areas, being presented by teachers who are fully qualified teachers, who are in their own right probably excellent teachers, but are being asked to deliver material with which they're not familiar. And that creates a whole range of additional expectations in terms of the ones that Gabby's described that are purely focused on the classroom and not necessarily the sort of administrative tasks that that Gabby's emphasised there that go to you know, a whole range of other extraneous issues that don't actually impact on student outcomes, don't actually do what most teachers are in the job for, and that's doing the very best that they can to make a difference in the lives of the young people who are in our schools.
Mm. Is there a shortage of teachers? I mean, there's a huge number of people, of course, willing to take it up who enrol in teacher training courses, and I'm told, at least in some states, that demand for positions exceeds supply. What is the situation with teacher numbers anyway?
It varies enormously, Phil, across the nation. In Queensland at the moment, we're facing quite drastic shortages.
Right.
Outside
of big population centres, you mean, or in as well?
Yeah, even in the southeast corner, you know, there's certainly the case that in most of our most remote centres, teachers are being recruited from other states because Queensland teachers aren't available to go there. We have issues on any given day in schools, even in the southeast corner of Queensland, and I think these are similar issues across different states where when a teacher is absent due to illness or on professional development, then there are no teachers available to replace that person. So we do have a significant supply issues, and the sorts of issues that Gabby has described, and the point you make about 30% of teachers separating from the profession in the first 5 years, and there are a whole range of reasons why they're doing that, is feeding back into the system and putting a really significant barrier in the road of people applying to become teachers. And so that's why we're experiencing these shortages. And in areas like maths and science in particular, those shortages have been around for decades, and it appears that nothing that we've done as systems to respond to those shortages have actually had any impact on being able to recruit.
I've been complaining about these things ever since I've been on air. For 25 years ago, we've been complaining about the shortage of maths teachers. We still have a shortage of maths teachers. I'm amazed, actually, that no one's been able to solve the matter.
No, and we've tried any number of experiments. You know, there's been scholarships. There's been ways in which people could gain accelerated progression through salary scales. We've, you know, paid people's tuition at university, HECS charges, et cetera, et cetera. And in fact, many of our colleague organisations around the world in terms of education systems are finding the same issue. It's extremely difficult to attract people in the maths and science field in particular, but also across areas like technology, industrial technology and design, which is what we used to call manual arts, woodwork and metalwork, as many people will remember it, is areas where we're really struggling to find teachers to come into schools to present those quality educational programs that we know that students need to get the rounded education that they deserve.
Mm. All right, Kevin Bates is with me. He's the president of the Australian Teachers Union, and Gabby Stroud, too, a former teacher who gave it up, who got disillusioned. We're talking about teacher burnout. I mean, whatever view you take about teachers, and, you know, we've got some negative comments about the conditions they have, but whatever view you take of it, if we're trying to teach the nation's kids and 30% of the people we're recruiting are quitting in 5 years, then something is going wrong. What do you think is going wrong? Just back to you, Gabby, for a second too. You talk about the issue being about trust, that we've simply lost trust in our teachers, and that's part of the problem. Tell me about that.
I think that what's happened in Australia at the moment over several years is that, you know, our results have declined. Our NAPLAN results aren't looking great.
No.
And our PISA results aren't looking as good as they should. And I think that what's happened is that the government's recognised this and sort of gone, right, well, we need to do something. And so there's been a whole bunch of different things that have been thrown at teachers and implemented into schools to try and remedy these problems. The thing is that those things that have been thrown at teachers are formal and standardised tools and devices. And the thing is that teachers know how to use those things intuitively, and yet these things have been imposed on them and made to be used, whether the teacher thinks it's the right thing or not. And the trouble with that then is that the teachers are using, you know, sort of the wrong tool for the job, and they're going, you know, in one direction when they know intuitively that their class needs to go in another direction. And I think what we need to do at this point in time in Australia is we need to look at these declining results and we need to sort of ask the question, well, how's that working for us? Look at all these things that we've done. And we have to really question and ask ourselves, you know, is this working? And if it's not, then we need to make these significant changes. And one of the things is that we need to put the trust back in our teachers. And instead of imposing all these structures and testing regimes and standards and procedures on teachers, is to say to them instead, you know what, you guys know what you're doing. Let's let you do it. And I think that what we would see over time is an increase in the results, because what's going to happen then is teachers, you know, their well-being is going to increase. They're going to start having more confidence in themselves. They're going to start teaching well. They're going to go back to the things that they know work. They're going to, you know, meet their learners at their point of need. They're going to get to know their classroom cohorts, and they're going to teach them in the way that they need to be taught. And over time, we're going to see things improve, because that's what teachers do. You know, there's so much out there that says, you know, standards are declining and we need to improve the standards. Well, no teacher's arguing against that. What teachers want to have some say in is how we improve those standards and how we go about it.
Jim, you've been waiting on a bit. Hello, welcome to Night Life.
Hello, thank you. I couldn't agree more with what your presenters have said. Having been a recently retired teacher, but having taught for 30 years, noticed that so many of the casual teachers that were out of university and teachers' college that were teaching at the schools which I'd taught at, excellent teachers, really bright futures, but unfortunately struggling to get a permanent position, so they might teach, you know, 2-3 days a week if they're lucky, would have to teach many, many different classes that they weren't really trained in. And then basically in the end, they just said, look, this is just all too hard. We're getting paid for 3 days, but we have 5 days worth of bills, and they left the profession. And there's three of them which I know, which I've met over the years. One was a music teacher, one was a maths teacher, and the other one was like PE trained. They all went into different professions, and when I've spoken to them, they have found their job satisfaction just so much more in their profession other than teaching, and just a lot less stress.
Yeah, okay. Let's go to Mark. Hello, Mark.
G'day there.
Hi.
Yeah, it's, you know, like, as a teacher, it's really difficult to confront a class. You know, you may be diminutive, you know, like little small person. Some of those kids in high school, they're very scary. And the thing about it is you have to be really passionate about what you're teaching, I think, to get away with it. And, I mean, the relationship, too, forming a relationship with your students, how in the hell is a casual teacher going to be able to do that? That is one of the problems, that it's too haphazard, the employment levels, you know? You know, I really think that's one of the problems. They think, oh, yeah, we can just throw someone in there. Like, it's not like piecework in a factory or something. You have to form a relationship. You have to be passionate about the subject you're teaching. And a lot of people don't even get a chance to, well, I don't know why the hell they want to be a teacher to start with if they're not passionate about it.
No. Kevin, what do you think? What do you say to that?
Yeah, look, Mark's made a really excellent point. There's really two things in what he said. One is that we've seen from particularly conservative governments, but unfortunately from governments of all political persuasions, a massive growth in tenuous employment amongst teachers. And it's been perpetrated under the name of flexibility for employers, something that we've seen in other walks of life as well. And that tenuous nature of employment, you know, Mark mentioned the issue of creating relationships, having knowing your students and being able to build rapport with them in a way that allows you to understand them as a whole person, not just as a number sitting in front of you in a class. That's absolutely critical to the effectiveness of the teacher's role as a professional. There needs to be much more than just some sort of cursory understanding, but rather a deep understanding of the student and their needs. So that's one point. I think the other aspect of it is this notion that with that tenuous employment comes an inability for people to commit the energy that's required to the job that we do. So, you know, there is a no guarantee that tomorrow you're going to be employed, let alone with a particular class or a particular subject that you, as Mark's described, passionate for. And that also impinges on your ability to do the job.
I do have a codicil for that. You know, I think sometimes people that are more professional than others, you know, like particularly with science and mathematics, it's a very rigorous difference, you know, between, you know, perhaps, you know, like to be able to teach it correctly. You know, I think they should be paid a little bit more. If you know, like, wouldn't you do that if you wanted in the private enterprise, you know, like if you want to make a successful company? I think they should entice them with a little bit more money, actually.
Yeah, all right. Thanks for the call, Mark. What would you say, Kevin, to performance-based pay and conditions?
Yeah, look, all of the research, Phil, tells us that performance-based pay is completely inappropriate in the education setting.
In other words, teaching, paying better teachers more.
Yeah, it simply doesn't work. Teaching is a collegial profession. We get our best results by working together as teams, not by setting one person up against another to compete for limited resources. This is a fundamental misunderstanding of the systems. It's certainly something we see right across the world, people experimenting with, and in this mistaken belief that if you pay somebody more, that they'll somehow teach better. It's simply not true. Teachers take on the job because of their passion for their subject areas and their passion for making a difference in the lives of young people. Paying them more isn't going to make them more passionate. And so, you know, there is, in fact, a need for people to recognise that in some professions, you can, in fact, remunerate people equally and expect that everyone will lift to the standard that's required. But you also have to support the work that people do. And that's certainly one of the comments that Gabby made, was that, you know, we see a decreasing level of support for teachers in the job that they're meant to be doing and an increasing set of expectations around the work that really is not part of the role of a teacher.
I'm still getting a lot of comments now. I don't want to spend the rest of the program on this, but if you could address this one more time, this issue of conditions. How many holidays a week's holiday a year do teachers get?
Concessional leave, which is what it's called, is 10 weeks while students aren't in attendance at school. Most teachers, for example, have at least 1 week of that, which is in staff professional days or student free days. They're called different things in different states. And then on top of that, there is recognised of that 9 weeks that's left, 4 weeks of that is actually recreation leave, the same as is the standard employment condition for most of the rest
of
the
workforce. Teachers do get more time off than other workers. I mean, I'm getting a lot of comments along the lines of that, you know, people in other professions are also doing a huge amount of work. I can't believe in this day and age how lucky we are to get 10 weeks a year off plus all weekends. I've got friends in the corporate world who get 4 weeks off a year and work 60 plus hours a week. It's a professional role that requires a professional outlook, says my texters. 22 hours a week in class, that leaves 16 to do the rest, says another. I'm getting quite a bit of traffic on that. I mean, could you want just addressing that? Do you want to address it by saying, well, look, yes, teachers do get more time off in theory than other professions, but then again, teaching is a special profession, as you've outlined. Let's not focus on this.
I think, Phil, one of the problems is that it's a fundamental misunderstanding. You know, what TALIS tells us, this is an OECD-conducted survey that looks at the working conditions of teachers and school leaders. It tells us that in Australia we're working more hours as teachers and school leaders than almost any other country on earth, and it's in the range of 50 to 60 hours a week minimum that most teachers are working. So it's a fundamental misunderstanding to say that, you know, there's 20 hours a week in front of a student, and that's the work that people are doing. It's a bit like, what I absolutely endorse, which is the view that because women or men are at home looking after children, that they're not working. It's a full-time job to have responsibility for children. And when teachers are in charge of a class, there are an enormous range of expectations that go not just to the education of those students, but also their well-being across a whole range of physical and emotional and mental areas. Mm. And so really the basics of the 20-odd hours a week, 20 in secondary and 22 and a half in primary, that teachers are engaged face-to-face with students, which I might also add is higher than most other countries in the world, is that that's just the face-to-face. And in order to present that work, in order to do what you need to do with your class, there are many, many hours of preparation that have to be undertaken to present quality lessons. And then there's the follow-up for each of those lessons. And
so, but see, people in professions work. Would say, yeah, well, that's the same in my profession. That's the same in every profession. And that would be a fair observation. I mean, if you're a professional person in other jobs, of course you work outside of hours. That's just part of the deal.
And I guess, Phil, I would close by saying on this issue that the reality of the supply issue that we're confronting is that people have made an assessment that I don't want to be a teacher because the job is too difficult.
Yeah.
So, I understand that there's this view that the conditions are gold-plated and everyone should be rushing to become a teacher, but the reality is that they are not. And if you talk to people about why they are not being teachers any longer, those that have taken 4 years of hard graft in study to become a teacher, they will often say it's that nothing prepared me for the set of expectations that the role now has placed upon it. And that's a real concern for us as a profession because obviously, there is a great need for quality teachers to be out there in our schools working with students. And if we're creating a workload expectation that is such that it's preventing people from maintaining the profession, the vocation, then clearly there's a fundamental problem.
Mm. I suppose one other answer to it, isn't it, Kevin, is saying, well, look, if you really do believe that it's such a cushy job with such great conditions, why do people leave in such large numbers?
And often people who make those comments are saying, but I wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
So there seems to me to be a fundamental disconnect between the notion that somehow it's a cushy job, but people won't do it because it's too hard. So I think we certainly have a set of working conditions that on the surface of it appears to be very generous, but I have to say that anyone who knows a teacher, anyone who is a teacher in their family, will understand that the expectations are extremely high, and the pressure that's on teachers is what's leading to the sorts of separations that you've mentioned, 30% of teachers in the first 5 years in the profession.
Mm. Okay. Hi, we're just...
very carefully to everything that Kevin has been saying and nodding my head. But can I address that as well, this idea of all these holidays and the wonderful pay that teachers get?
Yeah. I only mention it, as I said, I don't want to devote the rest of the program to it, but it is an issue that comes up every time I discuss teachers and the problems we have with teachers. It's an issue that, and I think it's a communication issue, which teachers have in communicating what they do to the community at large.
Mm. I think it's a very brave person now who comes to me and says, oh, but you get paid so well and you get such great holidays, because they see my blood boiling beneath the surface of my skin when I'm told that.
Mm.
So, my school day, yes, I might farewell my students at 3 o'clock and then I go down and I do bus duty and then I go up to the office and then I ring around for all the kids that miss their bus or who are crying because they were waiting for mum and forgot that they were meant to go on the bus. And I deal with all of that. And then I go and I deal with all the notes that I have to write and the forms I have to fill out about the Band-Aids that I gave out that day. And then I go to my program and I evaluate the lessons that I did that day. And then I might field a phone call or two from a parent whose, little child has just arrived home and they've lost their hat or, they're not sure about what to do for their homework or could I have a look and see if they've left, their swimming bag out at the bag racks. Then I'll gather up all my notes and my bits and pieces and I'll go to a staff meeting. And I'll be lucky if that staff meeting finishes before 5:30, 6 o'clock. And then I'll lump everything into my car and I'll go home and I'll throw something on the table and call it dinner and feed that to my own family. And then after that, I'll drag all the stuff out of my car and I'll sit down and I'll cut out little teddy bear templates so my students the next day can do their artwork. And, you know, I'll send out emails.
Is that a typical, like, is this a typical day, Gabby?
This is a stock standard typical day. I'm not making this stuff up. You know, you really can't make up a teacher's day. And the worst of it is, Philip, is that then I hop into bed and I lie there and I can't sleep because I'm worried about this little one who I know just doesn't have enough food in their lunchbox. And I'm worried about this other little one whose mother I think has a drinking problem. But I've got to go real careful before I say anything about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the emotional toll on a teacher is, you know, just as much as the physical workload. You know, there is so much going on for our teachers. You know, so excuse us if we kind of, you know, fall in a heap for a week or two during our allocated stand down time. But, you know, after we've fallen down in a heap, we get back up again and we go in and we clean our classrooms and, you know, I've done everything. I've vacuumed up fly carcasses. I've, you know, swabbed at spider webs. I've painted walls. I've covered books. I've built bookshelves. You know, this idea that teachers get great holidays, you come with me. You come with me when it's the
I must say, that's, I'm getting plenty of email email and other text traffic on that too. Jade says, if only that parent who stands back and claims how cushy my job is could follow me around for a day, they would be gobsmacked. Gabriel Stroud, teacher and writer, is with me. So is Kevin Bates, president of the Queensland Teachers Union. We're talking teacher burnout. Kevin, can we go back to one of these other chestnuts too, and that is how to make things better and get better quality teachers. A lot of people say, well, we should pay them more. Now, I know you're probably not, as a president of the Queensland Teachers Union, not going to say no to more pay, but is that a glib answer, or do you think it's part of the answer?
It is part of the answer, Phil, but the reality is you can't make the job doable by simply paying people more. And, you know, we get this feedback from our members all the time. We need to have a respectable and professional wage. We need to have a salary level that genuinely recognises the complexity of the task that we're being asked to do. But paying people more doesn't make the job doable in the time that's available. And that's, you know, a fundamental premise that we have to keep in mind all the time when we're conducting negotiations around this. Workload and the expectations of the teaching profession are not managed by simply paying people more. So you have to, in fact, have a complementary set of working conditions that's about trying to put some limits around the expectations of teachers. And please understand, because I want to rush to add here, what we're talking about is not saying we should be relieving teachers of duties. That are fundamental to the outcomes of the students that are in their classes. What we're talking about is relieving teachers of the things that teachers don't need to be doing. And that's really, really important. You know, when there's a surgeon standing in the operating theatre, they're not the one who's going to be going out and autoclaving the instruments to make sure that they're sterile. There's somebody who has a job to do that. And you've just heard Gabby, I think, very eloquently describe the sorts of day that a teacher would normally have. And, you know, she's really only touched the surface because, you know, as a school leader myself in the past, you know, when you have a scenario where a child reports sexual abuse to you or where you encounter a child who is neglected or where you're dealing with matters to do with the police or the Department of Communities, you know, you add any number of layers like that onto the job of the teacher. It's not just about delivering that lesson about how to spell or how to count. It's in fact an enormously complex process that requires an enormous varied skill set. You know, we think that salary is an important consideration, but we have to have that balanced by working conditions that actually make the job doable.
Maybe it's more widespread than we think. Darren from Sydney has sent us a text saying, Phil, I can relate to your guests. I also experienced burnout, but I was a builder, not a teacher. Basically, I couldn't handle the non-building work, the paperwork, the OH&S, the contracts, the quotes, the training on new building methods, the legals, the accounting, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The work became so unproductive and I felt like I was doing everything except for building. I gave it away. Now I'm painting houses. The country's lost the plot. We're all bogged down doing things that don't matter than rushing around doing what is important. Yeah. Elle from Swanburn says, the point about salary is that it attracts the right people to the profession, not that it makes the job any easier. Maybe. Where are we? Ben, sorry, you've been waiting on there a bit. Ben, sorry about that.
No, not at all. It's fine. How are you going anyway?
Yeah, good. Thanks.
That's good. Mate, there's three main issues. I'm a teacher. I've been teaching now for 12 years. So I'm not as experienced as the two people we have experts here. But three issues that I have. One is we are getting dictated to by people who haven't stepped foot in a classroom since they were students themselves. We're being told we should do this, we should do that, and how to do it. And it just doesn't work. You haven't been in the classroom. You don't know what these students are like. The second point is we are pushing students through, no matter if they can read or write. And I've just finished marking 200 G10 papers, and there was at least 40 or 50 that just were getting basic grammatical spelling sentence structure. They were just getting it wrong. And this is U10. And it was frustrating marking because I know they're just going to be pushed through into year 11, into year 12, and going to leave. And the third thing which is really hurting teachers is our hands are tied when it comes to students. There's only so much we can do in regards to behavioural management and things like that. There are students who can, I'm fortunate I get along with most of my students, but there's students who can swear at teachers and carry on. And what do? We send them out of the classroom, and that hinders their learning even more. So it's frustrating as a teacher because, we're being told what to do by people who haven't been in a classroom in forever and a day. We're pushing kids through in a bubble environment, and there's nothing we can do about it. So no wonder a lot of young teachers are leaving the profession because they're banging their heads against a brick wall, and they're not getting anywhere for it.
Okay, all right. How much is that an issue, Kevin, this issue of discipline in schools and the pressure that teachers feel to maintain order, especially in difficult areas where kids are being drawn from socioeconomic areas that have got a lot of social problems attached to them? I grew up in a school system that was, dominated by corporal punishment. We don't have that anymore.
Thank goodness.
And I think most people would say thank goodness. But, we just got belted every day by a teacher pretty much throughout high school. That doesn't happen anymore. How much of that is an issue these days, though, the lack of the teachers feel disempowered about in that area?
Look, it's a huge issue, Phil, and I think Ben's description of those three issues, those are words that come out of the mouths of teachers all over Queensland, right around Australia and right around the world. So they are, in a nutshell, three of the key concerns that people share. The issue of behaviour management, classroom management, is extremely problematic because when teachers are asking students to behave in a particular way, they have to have the students' respect. I come back to a comment that Gabby made earlier about the fact that the community has lost its respect for teachers to a large extent. That message has gone through loud and clear to students. Once upon a time, when I started teaching 30-odd years ago, the conversation with parents was about what the child had done and the consequences that would accrue because of that behaviour. In this day and age, it's often about the teacher trying to justify to the parent why anything should happen because the immediate inclination is to trust the student before they trust the teacher.
That's a change, isn't it, Gabby? Because, I grew up, and I don't know whether you did, in a system whereby if you came home and said something was going on at school, your parents instinctively sided with the teacher. You weren't not usually given much shrift yourself, I must say.
Yeah, absolutely. But those days are gone. Those days are gone. And, teachers do a lot of time. I often felt like I was in a hostage situation. I was damned if I did and damned if I didn't. There were kids there who desperately needed guidance and boundaries and firm consequences for their behaviour. But, when we would set those up within our classroom, with the support of the principal, negotiated as a whole school, this is our policy, you would then have parents knocking at the door, telling you and threatening you that they were going to take it higher. And, that's a really nerve-wracking sort of experience to have because, the thing that people don't realise when we're talking about behaviour management, it's really scary when you're in a classroom and a child starts acting out. As a teacher, you're the one adult in the room and, that child can really just take over your whole lesson. They can turn other students and turn their behaviour and suddenly your heart's racing and it becomes this kind of battle of control.
And, you know, there's research that shows that there's one thing that we can do that will relieve teacher stress, and that is to have another adult in the room.
Hmm.
You know, it's such a simple thing. But, you know, can you imagine if in classrooms across Australia, if we had, like, another teacher in there, you know, or even made sure that every single class had a teacher's aide so that when those situations, you know, arose, there's another adult that you can look at and you can just sort of share that moment and go, okay, we got this, we're going to get through it. But, you know, when you're the only adult in there and you're trying to keep control and this child's holding a chair up or they've just sworn at you or they're throwing things against a wall, you know, it's such a slippery slope. You just wonder how you're going to keep it together.
Mm. Okay, all right. Where are we? Gabby Stroud's one of my guests, teacher and writer, and Kevin Bates, the president of the Queensland Teachers Union. Yes, Jane, you've been hanging on there too. Hi.
Oh, hi there, Phil.
Hi, Jane.
Look, I'm a teacher and I've been teaching for quite a long time, and it's a fantastic job and it's a privilege to be able to do it. But when it comes to things like holidays, they're an absolute essential thing to have because that's a time when teachers can just recharge their batteries. In fact, if I didn't have those holidays, I couldn't be a teacher because teaching is a really consuming job. It takes up all your headspace, not just when you're at school, but, you know, throughout the rest of your hours of each day. And so, you know, those holidays are just a time when you can just kind of get yourself back together again and feel, refreshed to go back and have, another go. So they're really essential. But it seems to me, as a teacher, that schools have become that place that everyone looks to when there's a problem in society. And so whenever there's something going wrong with our kids, or out there in the community, then people are quick to say, okay, schools have to take us on board. And it might be, mental health, or it might be first aid. It might be physical fitness. You know, it might be anything. And so schools are trying to tick all these boxes and meet all these demands that are being made on it. And in the end, we it seems to me that we're trying to do too many things, and as a result, we can't do things as well as we teachers think that, you know, our kids need. So it's a tough job. Constantly, we're being told to change what it is that we're doing, and yet those changes don't come with any resourcing. Well, they come with very limited or inadequate resourcing. And so it makes it a really, really tough job.
Okay. All right, we're just hearing from teachers tonight. Gabby Stroud, teacher and writer, is with us, and Kevin Bates, president of the Queensland Teachers Union. In short and very briefly, Gabby, what would you do to make it better?
There's no short and brief answer for that. I'm really sorry. But look, I'm the first to admit I don't know the answer.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a simple answer. I don't think there's an easy fix. I think this is a deeply complex issue. The one thing that I think we need, well, I'm going to say two things. The first is that I think we need a massive paradigm shift in Australia in how we think about education and what we want for the students that are currently going through our education system.
Hmm.
I think that we all need to stand up and say, no, what we're doing isn't working. In fact, it's quite harmful. And the second thing that I think that would be a great solution is to divorce education from politics. If we could take the government out of education, and if we could have education standing alone so that it wasn't a political football that changes every time our leadership changes, I think that would bring us great benefits.
Mm.
That's probably not going to happen. So failing that, I'd really like to see a visionary politician, if there are any out there that exist, to stand up and say, okay, enough's enough, we need to do something and we need to fix this up.
Mm, okay. All right, Kevin, to you, what do you think is the way home on this?
Gabby's comments, and I think she shouldn't lose hope. There are a couple of Scandinavian countries that have done exactly what she just described, completely divorced education from the political process and ensured that instead of this, election cycle policy changes that create a revolving door in classrooms for a whole range of essential issues like curriculum and so on, are in fact allowed to come back to the control of the professionals. And that's where I would want to see the major change happening. We need to
have faith in teachers and school leaders. They've done an enormous amount of training. They have, you know, when you look across our teaching workforce, a cumulative experience of hundreds of years of classroom experience. We need to trust that those people know what is best for the education system. Okay. Set high expectations, but allow teachers and principals to get on and do the job that we're asking them to do.
Yes, well, there's nothing wrong with high expectations. I think we ought to have those. All right. Well, Kevin, thank you for that. Appreciate your time this evening. Kevin Bates, President of the Queensland Teachers Union, and Gabrielle Stroud, too, a teacher and writer. Thanks to you, Gabby, for joining us as well.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.